And now he's running on restaurant grease. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
I am. I got it out of the grease dumpster.
That's right. I know that.
I'm having that thing with the cat thing again. I'm having the... I can smell cat pee. I don't know where it's emanating from. But my life is
probably the cats.
Smelling cat pee and not knowing where it's from. Folks, here we go. His father was an Oscar-winning actor. He's been in television and movies for about 35 years, going back to a role in The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes. And he also appeared on Room 222, which we were talking about just a minute ago. Most of America got to know him for his role as Dr. Victor Ehrlich on St. Elsewhere. He's recently been a guest star on Arrested Development, movies like Mighty Wind, Best in Show, and my wife's favorite, that isn't even on his bio. I don't know what you think of this. Dr. Duck's Super Secret All-Purpose Sauce. Do you know anything about that, Ed Begley?
No.
You don't?
I don't remember it.
That's hilarious.
I'm not saying I didn't do it. I just don't remember it.
it's a weird... Let me finish the intro. He's also an environmental activist who's gained notoriety for his support of electric cars and other things. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Mark, thank you for having me on.
I'm so glad you're here. This was the weirdest thing because I'm preparing the interview of you today. And I'm sitting there with my wife, and she goes, have you seen this sketch show? It looked like something from the early 80s. It looked like a lot of Comedy Store people. I was at the Comedy Store. I was a doorman there. And you played a pope. There was a surfer pope.
Oh, okay. They took this. It was Mike Nesmith did this thing, and I can't remember what the title of that was. And they obviously took that bit, and they inserted it into this show that you just spoke of. Yeah, it was called Pope. John Paul George Ringo or something. And
right.
He was the first surfer pope.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about it.
It was kind of funny. It was weird that I guess that so someone just put together their own video of pieces of other stuff.
Pieces of other stuff. Yeah, I remember doing that. 1980 we did it. Yeah, 80 or 81.
It was so weird seeing those people because when I first started doing, I started as a stand-up like in 86 or so. I guess I was a doorman at the Comedy Store in 87. And there's that wall of names there.
Yeah.
And yours is on there, and I didn't know. Did you do stand-up?
I did. Michael Richards and I had a duo back in the late 60s and early 70s. Then he went off in the Army, and I was all alone. I went, maybe I'll try my hand solo stand-up, and I did it for years, and he came back, and we tried it again, and he went on to be Kramer and many other wonderful things, a great comedian, great actor. But I did it for years. I did the Troubadour lot, the Comedy Store,
right.
Max's Kansas City, the
really?
Bottom Line, colleges, concerts, clubs, yeah.
So you did it for a while. You had a whole act and you went out on the road.
Yeah, through the 70s. I had, it was the 70s. A lot of drug humor, you know. I had an LAPD uniform. That's what I started with. That was my opening bit. So you
really?
Can imagine what this was like.
That's great. I had no idea because it's so weird when you come into comedy later and you see all those names on the wall that of people like Craig T. Nelson. I had no idea he did stand-up.
Yeah,
that
with
guy.
Rudy DeLuca, he had an act, I believe, with Rudy DeLuca, who
really?
Writes with Mel Brooks, right.
I love that kind of stuff. I love that kind of history. So now, I want to talk a little bit about growing up in Hollywood, because you spent your whole life here, right?
Yeah, I was born at Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital, came home to a little home in Van Nuys, and I live probably 6 miles from where I grew up, in Van Nuys. So I'm still in the Valley, and I love it here. You can find a parking space, like I did right in front of the studio here. I found a parking space.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love it.
Yeah. Now, your dad was a big actor, so does that mean you grew up hanging around with Hollywood big actors or what?
No, he was an odd duck. He had friends from, like, the wire mold plant in Hartford, factory workers.
Yeah.
He was a factory worker that made it late in life as an actor. He wanted to be an actor his whole life. Didn't see any success or any action really till he was in his 40s, late 40s, started to get really more successful in his 50s and 60s. So he had a lot of, old friends from...
Regular people.
And finally, when I was like 16, he started hanging out with Debbie Reynolds, who played Tammy. And she was Unsinkable Molly Brown. They did a movie together. He played her dad in Unsinkable Molly Brown. Like, wow, we're going to Debbie Reynolds' house. And
yeah.
I met Carrie Fisher, her daughter. And wow, it was exciting. These Hollywood people suddenly.
And it just happened like in the middle of your teens. That's probably a good time for it to happen.
Yeah.
Because then you get to appreciate it a little bit.
Yeah. How old were you when he did 12 Angry Men?
I was a very young man. I think I was 5 or 6, a young boy. And I didn't see it till many years later.
Oh, okay.
And didn't appreciate it all, any of it. I didn't really know. I knew my dad was an actor, but I thought, he's some actor. He's just some guy. Who's your favorite actor? John Wayne's my favorite actor. He's a great actor. My dad, what does he do? I didn't think he did anything. I had no appreciation of my father till I was in my late teens, maybe early 20s. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I fully appreciated his work till I was in my 20s.
I feel the same about my dad. I'm still waiting to appreciate him as deeply as I can, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard when it's your dad. You know, other people are like, God, he's the greatest. And you're like, he's my dad.
Yeah, he's my dad.
All right. So you seem to be in this community of comedic actors, very well respected. You always seem to show up in these great films with Christopher Guest. You did Arrested Development. Is that just by virtue of the fact that you've known these guys for years and you all know each other as being funny and you know each other's groove and that you call each other on the phone? I've always, like, you and Christopher Guest, are you guys buddies?
I became friends with Christopher years ago. I knew his sister Alyssa Guest.
Yeah.
And I met him and whatnot. This is a guy who did Radio Dinner and, you know, Lemmings, I think, and all these other shows. I mean, this wonderful, you know, brilliant writer, performer. Wow, I'm meeting him. It was very exciting for me even back then. And so he came and saw my insane stand-up act and somehow found something kind to say about it.
In the 70s.
And he and I remained friends for years. And then he did... they did Spinal Tap, and they asked me to play a small part in that.
You were the first drummer.
I was, Stumpy Joe Pete. I die in a bizarre gardening accident.
Right. And then you were just in Mighty Wind playing the extremely goyish guy who speaks Yiddish.
Right, exactly. The goyish guy is trying to ingratiate himself to Mr. Steinblum by peppering his conversation with lots of Yiddish.
And how much of that stuff is improvised?
It was all improvised. It was an insane idea that just happened on the set, and Chris, of all people, you know, he allowed it. The fact that he would allow me to do that.
You came up with the Yiddish thing?
Yeah.
That was so twisted.
I mean, how many sets can you do that, though? I mean, how many directors would allow you that? Most people that take off the headphones and come over there, Ed, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're a Swedish-American guy. Why are you talking Yiddish? It doesn't make any sense. The audience isn't going to understand. Do it again. Talk Swedish if you want, but don't.
The commitment to it was hilarious.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, in Arrested Development, working with Liza Minnelli, was that weird?
It was huge.
Yeah.
Huge for me. I know her. I've known her for years.
Yeah.
We're both, you know, sons and daughters of famous people. She's the daughter of a very famous person.
Director. And two famous people, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's the daughter of two famous ones. And we've known each other a while, and I don't think we'd ever worked together till that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I love that show. I'm a big fan of the show long before I was ever on it, and then got a chance to work on it. Jeffrey Tambor is a very good friend of mine. He's pretty good.
He's a funny guy, too.
Oh, boy.
That's
about as good as it gets, I think, Jeffrey Tambor.
Oh, yeah, Dave Cross, too.
Dave Cross.
I lived with Dave Cross years ago. He used to let me sleep on his couch.
Really?
We're a different generation of comedic weirdos. You know, it seems like every generation of comics, they all sort of engage, you know, they all kind of intermingle somehow.
They do.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So let's talk about a little bit about what's going on with your activism. I know that you became very famous for, like, really the first electric car, it seems. Is that true?
Well, Henry Ford's wife actually preferred her electric car to his noisy kerosene vehicle. They ran on kerosene at first and then gasoline later. So, you know, electric cars have been around for a while. But I bought my first one in 1970. I was just fed up with the smog. You know? I was fed up with the smog in 1971. I know it's a small thing, but I'm going to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem in my small way. And I drove one for a while, but they were very slow back then. They went 15 miles an hour. It was basically a golf cart with a windshield wiper and a horn.
So you're driving around Hollywood then?
Yeah. Mostly the valley. To get over the Cuenca Pass into Hollywood was no small feat.
I bet.
You know, and so it was a real hazard on the road. I mean, it really went to top speed of 15 miles an hour. The range was about 15 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, not for the road. It was for a retirement community. They were, you know.
They make those now. They're very popular. They go a little faster.
Yeah, they go 25 at least, or 30 or something.
Which
but 15 is ridiculous.
Which is, it's scary for those retirees to be whipping around at 25.
I know.
So I actually saw you walking down the street out here in the valley, and I thought, well, that's a guy who's definitely environmentally conscious. No one walks.
I walk everywhere. I live in Studio City, a neighborhood
that's
designed to, you know, go to the restaurant, go to the bank, go to the post office. You can walk and live in an area where there's lots of commerce and there's lots of homes. And so there are, you know, other neighborhoods like that. The Crenshaw District is like that. Larchmont is like that. Montana. You know,
Sure.
There are some neighborhoods left, and they're good things.
Yeah, absolutely. There's let's talk about it in a minute. So you got, we're talking to Ed Begley Jr. We're going to talk about environmentalism, walking in Los Angeles, and communities, and why they're important. Is that okay, Jim?
And steam cars.
Steam, really?
Yeah. I want to ask him about steam.
I don't think it's practical. All right, we'll be back in a second.
We'll talk.
All right.
guaranteed not to hurt your pipes. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We're here with Ed Begley Jr. Ed Begley Jr. talking about stuff. We're going to talk about steam cars in a minute, but all of a sudden I've been sucked back into the vortex of 70s Hollywood. That had to have been the best time ever.
It was a lot of fun. I guess I technically wasn't really there because I remember all of it. So, you know.
But there was all those parties in the hills, and you were talking
about...
Yeah,
lots of parties. Good parties.
Doing that thing with Michael Nesmith and having him... Now, he made all his money on liquid paper or something, right?
His mother invented liquid paper, yes.
He was a guitar player for the Monkees, but that was sort of a Hollywood creation.
Yeah.
And then he produced things.
Yeah, but he wrote some good songs. He wrote, you know, that Stone Pony song and what have you, that Linda Ronstadt had a hit with a different drum, and he's a good writer, of
you
scripts.
You still talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How's he doing?
Doing good.
Yeah?
Living in New Mexico. Wonderful guy.
Oh, I grew up in New Mexico. He lives out there just hanging out?
Yeah, he's somewhere near where they had that accident, the nuclear lab, Los Alamos.
Oh, is that by Los Alamos? Yeah.
Somewhere near there.
It's pretty country. So,
beautiful.
like, in what was the greatest thing that ever happened, like, in that time, in the 70s? Like, in your memory in show business, what stands out as one of the great moments for you?
Anything I just remember going to the Troubadour in those days, and you could go and sit front row center, and a new performer by the name of Bette Midler would come. And
right.
Who is she? And, oh, my God, she's great. And, you know, Tom Waits would be there. You'd be... this close as
like
I am to you.
He was 20 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would hang out together and go to bars together and drink together. And you'd sit this close to Joni Mitchell and Richard Pryor would come and do a set there at the Troubadour. And George Carlin and, you know, Tom Hicks and his Hot Licks. And,
right.
You know, great people. I opened for Canned Heat there, Don McLean, Dave Mason, Neil Sedaka, you know.
So they did a lot of comedy at the Troubadour, huh?
They did.
Huh. So, yeah, now let's get back to steam cars, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to add, on your website, you said, before that, on your website, you said you've reduced your waste,
yeah.
You know, to the size of one glove compartment per week.
That was when I was single, Jim. I've got a family now.
We're doing,
there's three of us, so we're doing about three glove compartments a week, but when I was single is when that L.A. Times article came out, the woman knocked on my door. You know, and said, Mr. Begley, I want to see your week's worth of trash, because tomorrow is a pickup day, and she was pretty good. It was a good article. It was funny, and it was because I had mouthed off at the County Board of Supervisors. Why do we need this landfill? We could recycle. Why I only throw out, and I picked a size just out of my head. I went, a glove compartment's worth of trash a week. You know, it seemed about what it was.
Yeah.
And she comes knocking my door saying, I want to see if your trash can fit in. Isn't today's Tuesday, and tomorrow's Wednesday the pickup? Let's see if it actually fits. I went... okay, I'll take my lumps and my praise. Let's see. And she was a very funny article. It was Actor Crams for Test.
And did you?
So I'm actually like cramming it in with my feet. But it fit. And I had this little tiny VW Rabbit converted to electric. The smallest glove box you've ever seen in a VW Rabbit. Check it out. It's
okay.
Small.
Yeah.
But it all fit.
Wait, how the hell do you do that? Because I produce more garbage than a small city.
I was single then. Now, you know, I've got a child. I've got a wife. It's different. But
what about takeout? You're single. That should be takeout.
I wasn't doing takeout. I would I grew a lot of food in the backyard. I'd go, you know, I'd eat stuff on plates and I would pre-cycle a lot. By that I mean buy stuff that had very little packaging and buy in bulk.
Uh-huh.
It was a thing with me. I wanted to throw away. My goal was to throw away nothing in a week. I never got there, but I got down to the point every week. It was about a glove compartment's worth.
By throwing away nothing, you mean recycling things and using compost and all that
exactly.
Kind of thing?
I would compost a lot, recycle a lot, and then what was left after all that would be about a glove compartment.
Do you still do it?
I do all that. I recycle all that, compost all that, but there's more of us in the house, and my wife isn't quite as much for recycling or pre-cycling as I am,
uh-huh.
But I find ways, you know, I sell this Begley's Best product now, so when she, you know, she doesn't take the canvas bags in the store the way I do. She just is not, it's not going to happen. So she gets these plastic bags. Finally, I've given up fighting on that one. I collect them, and I use them to put my stuff in when I sell my stuff at Studio City Farmers Market. I said, do you mind a recycle bag? Everybody says, no, I don't mind at all.
So just a bag from shopping or whatever?
A bag from shopping. You know, clean bag. It can't be a bag that you had a bunch of stuff in it. It's got to be a clean bag.
Yeah.
And you put it in a clean bag, and everybody's happy.
So you're basically running a farm out of your backyard in some
no,
respect?
No, it's a little...
What do you
know,
take to the farmer's market?
To the farmer's market, I take my Begley's Best cleaning supplies. I have these non-toxic cleaning supplies that I sell. They sell at Whole Foods, Wild Oats, Erewhon, Lassen's, and now I also sell them at the Studio City Farmer's Market. I have a little booth, and I sell natural soap, that is manufactured in Simi Valley by some friends of mine.
Glycerin soap?
It's natural, no animal products, no petroleum products. It's all natural, vegetable, plant-based stuff.
Okay.
And it's really nice soap.
Yeah.
And I sell that, and I sell spray, you know, like non-toxic glass cleaner, a non-toxic household cleaner.
What's in that?
In the non-toxic glass cleaner, the discount one is basically this acetic compound derived from grains, all natural. You can spray that in your mouth. I do that as a demonstration. I spray it right in my mouth. It's so safe.
They must be so thrilled just to see you there.
Yeah, they are. Whatever works.
And on top of that, you're spraying stuff in your mouth to prove a point. That's got to be a highlight.
So you can't even get high off this cleaner.
You can't. Then I got another. I got a a premium glass cleaner that has some alcohol. You don't want to spray that in if you're a sober person, which I am. You know, that's got some alcohol.
You're not going to believe who we saw at the farmer's market. You know that fellow used to be on the doctor show? He's there spraying cleaner in his mouth. Yep. You got to go with me next week. I don't know why the hell he's doing it.
Who
must
knows?
Be crazy.
I'm trying to do, it's a little Newman's Own kind of a thing I'm trying to do here, to give the money to charity. We've been open a year, this Begley's Best company.
Mm-hmm.
We've generated, you know, paltry $28,000 in sales, but we've given $3,600 to Rainforest Action Network, Midnight Mission, Humane Society of the U.S., on and on, environmental groups, of every stripe. We've given away $3,600, more than 10% of our gross.
Now, is there a separate website for this? I'm sorry, Jim, because I went to edbegley.com, and I didn't look for the marketing. Is there a separate website for the Begley product?
Yeah, it's called begleysbest.com.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there's a store link on there.
Yeah,
I know, but I didn't. Mr. So-and-so did his homework today, and you're all proud of yourself.
It's made
out
of pomegranate seeds and stuff.
Exactly.
It's great.
Oh, good. Go ahead, ask him some more questions. This guy's right up your alley.
What's your car of choice? What did you drive today?
Today I drove, my number one vehicle of choice is my bike. I prefer that, but today I didn't have time. I have to go somewhere right after. I have my electric car, which I charge in the sun. I have a lot of solar panels in my house, so it's 100% clean, not just the tailpipe, but clean in the power generation, electric car. And then when I have to go longer trips, like to Santa Barbara or to Pittsburgh, I take my wife's hybrid, which gets great mileage, gets 60 miles per gallon.
You drive to Pittsburgh?
I drove to Pittsburgh to do a play with Jeff Goldblum, and it cost me $90 to get there, which is cheaper than Priceline.com. It's not just the environment, Mark. I'm cheap, okay?
Okay, finally we get to the bottom of it.
I'm a cheap person.
That guy Goldblum, he's a little quirky, isn't he?
He's great. He's great. And we filmed a movie about the whole experience. That's his hometown, Pittsburgh.
Really?
Going back to his hometown, we filmed a movie called Pittsburgh. It was the, I think, one of the opening films at the Tribeca Film Festival. Did very well.
Did it?
Yeah, it's called Pittsburgh. And I'm in that. It's a documentary of his returning to Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. So, Jim, I think you and Ed should be friends. You're like, you should be his hero. You're living the life that he wants to live.
This guy is the pinnacle of this type of thinking, this type of way of life. It's great.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you.
Does it make you feel better?
You know, it does. And it's not just the environment. All this stuff, I'll confess, I did, I suppose, for the environment. But now it's been so good for my bottom line. By that, I mean, it's not like I'm rich. I'm not a millionaire. I don't have a lot of money in the bank.
Yeah.
But I don't need to be rich because I don't need a lot of money.
You
I don't have an electric bill to speak of. I don't buy much gasoline. I don't use a lot of natural gas to heat my house or to cool it or to, you know, heat my water. My water is all heated by the sun. I cook out in the sun in my solar oven, you know, a lot.
Okay, okay. Let's start at the top of the list then.
Okay.
So you don't pay any heating bills or electric bills because you got panels.
I got a lot of panels, and I'm very well insulated. I have a natural gas bill, but it's very low because I do most of my heating of water with the sun, and I am well insulated.
The computer and stuff, you pay the electricity.
I pay very little. When I was single, I used about $100 worth of power in a year. I signed up for the Green Power program, so even that was green power. Now that I'm married, this whole 68 in the winter, 78 in the summer ain't going to fly anymore, Mark, okay?
Yeah,
it's like
the
trash. Things have changed.
Yeah, yeah. Women want to be comfortable.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's like 72 year-round, but since it's well-insulated, it doesn't take that much to do it.
What about the computer and the TiVo and the...
All that stuff. I don't have a TiVo, but I have other stuff, and, you know, there's more people in the house, there's more laundry.
Right.
So I use about $600 a year worth of green power, the green power for Green LA, and to charge a car... To run a house, to run my wife's business. She's got a little business there at the house, and on to run my business, Begley's Best. Two businesses, one car charging, one house, and a child. That's pretty good for $600 a year.
Jeez. That's unbelievable. So wait, is there a how-to? on the website? Like, how do you live like Ed Begley?
Well, the how-to, the one thing I kind of cheated back when I had money, I had a TV series. I bought a hell of a lot of solar panels. I couldn't afford that today, but now, you know, I'm the recipient of this largesse for the rest of my life because these panels don't break down. There's no moving parts. You know, they're just up there on the roof generating power.
Why the hell don't we all... I know that Britain's doing it. Why the hell don't we do that here? Why aren't more people alerted to this or do it or make it happen if it's that accessible?
Anybody that could afford it. And you don't have to buy, as I did, a sailboat to weather the storm of energy uncertainty. You can buy a dinghy or a life vest. By that, I mean you can buy just a kilowatt of solar or like three panels just to run a few things, you know, two or three panels. You can do that cheaply at realgoods.com or you go to my website and I'll turn people on to any of this stuff they want. There's good solar installers in the San Fernando Valley and in this region. Go to edbegley.com if anybody wants and I'll tell them some how-to.
All right. Well, there you go.
Good
there's an open invitation. I want to do this kind of stuff and I feel ashamed of the amount of waste we produce on some level, but my wife comes from hippie parents, and there's a spite there. I think that she likes her parents, but she grew up with the compost bin and the bugs in the kitchen and everything being cool and connected.
You can't have bugs in the kitchen. I'm not down with the bugs in the kitchen thing.
So you move your compost right outside.
Yeah, I've got a compost thing right outside the door, and we just don't have bugs in the house. Keep it tidy and you're fine.
Right, but you don't have anything against bugs.
No, bugs are fine. I'm not out spraying them with pesticides and stuff. No pesticides. I mean, bugs are fine. I invite them into my compost pile. You need them. I need grubworms.
Come on down.
I need all the many bugs that gobble up the compost, because I compost everything that, you know, doesn't go in the green bin. I put all the twiggy big stuff in the green bin, everything else, the table scraps, the grass clippings, the leaves. Not that I have so much grass. I took my lawn out when I moved in. There's a little piece of it on the parkway left that the city insist you maintain. But other than that, I took out all the lawn, put in all drought tolerant, put in fruit trees. I grow a lot of my food on site. So it's a good way to live because it's long-term prosperity.
And also it seems to be a great outlet for OCD.
Exactly. For a guy like me, bada-bing.
There you go. Well, I'm inspired. Thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom with us, Ed Begley. And if you want to go to edbegley.com, he said he'll help you out. So do that. And I wish you the best of luck with everything else.
Mark, Jim, you guys too. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Okay, man.